is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Susan, and today I'm wearing shorts for the last time in honor of the last day of summer. And I'd like to tell our radio audience, Susan's wearing a high-end turtleneck. She reminds me of Katharine Hepburn, who had a skinny neck and always wore things like that, but Susan wears them as a fashion plate. Now, normally, Dennis is here, Dennis Hart, to give us news from the Story City Herald, the Nevada Journal, and Tri-County Times, and the Boone News Republican, and he'll be covering state and local Ames news only on Mondays and Fridays, so we won't hear from Dennis on Wednesday, but be sure and listen for Dennis doing the local news on Monday and Friday.
Well, we'll look forward to the local news when he comes back in the spring. But we have a busy morning today, starting with a conversation between two of the artists performing at Ragtime and Randall on October 13th. After that, we'll hear Ron Tigner from the Iowa Farmers Union giving us an update on the constantly changing news of trade and tariffs. Finally, we'll learn how Frankenstein will come alive at the Ankeny Community Theater this Friday.
Well, now, I'm happy to welcome one of the stalwarts of the Ragtime and Randall event. Right here from Nevada, we have Rod Byenson. Rod, how are you today?
Doing great.
And I'd like to tell our audience that Rod plays a very hot ragtime piano. He's extremely talented. And the Ragtime and Randall event goes way back, more than 25 years. And it's an event in a small town up in northern central Iowa, right up in Hamilton County, off the interstate, Randall, Iowa. It's Ragtime and Randall. And we have a guest of, he's one of the members of the group that will be performing. And, Rod, tell us about this group that's coming in special this year for Ragtime.
Well, we're very blessed to have Lovestruck Balladeers, and I'm not making that name up. It's quite a talented group of musicians from New York City. And Dalton Reidenauer is my main contact person there. I've known him for a long, long, long time, and he was instrumental, I believe, in getting this group here, and we're very blessed to have them.
Well, we have Dalton on the phone, I believe. Dalton, how are you today?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Where are you right now?
I am in New York City.
Well, welcome to Ames, Iowa, via the modern transportation of wires and whatnot. So tell us about the Lovestruck Balladeers, Dalton.
Yeah, so the Lovestruck Balladeers is a group of five musicians. And we have a piano, which is myself, bass, Sean Cronin, guitar, Jake Sanders. And then we have two front line musicians, Dennis Lichtman, who actually plays clarinet, mandolin, and fiddle. And then we have Aaron Jonah Lewis, and he plays banjo and fiddle. So we have a versatile front line, which sort of enables us to do a wide variety of styles. And the band, three of us live in New York. Aaron is from Detroit, lives in the Detroit area. And Jake lives in the Chicago area.
So you are calling in from New York City today. And you, now, Rod, how did you guys get together here? How do you know Dalton?
We met at a ragtime festival in Fresno, California, a long time ago. Dalton, you remember what the year? I'm trying to remember right now. It's been a long time ago.
Sometime in the 90s, probably.
94, 95, 94. Something like that, I think.
Yeah, Rod, really. Now, full disclosure, I'm on the board for Ragtime and Randall, so I'm involved in organizing this event every year. And Rod was the one who told us about the Lovestruck
Balladeers.
Lovestruck.
Well, you know what? You're either sick or struck. It's a tough world out there. But now, tell us about the kinds of music you play, Dalton. Do you have a variety of things that you folks perform?
Yes. Obviously for the Ragtime and Randall event, we're going to be focusing on ragtime and, music of the early 1900s and into maybe the 1920s. We also play everything from fiddle tunes to, Italian waltzes to swing music. Most all of us, play swing music fairly regularly, you know, music of the 1930s and standards from that era. So, yeah, it's a wide variety of things. With the banjo, that sort of, like, leads itself into some folk music, the banjo and mandolin, play Americana and folk music. So, yeah.
So it's really a rich variety of things you do. And before we go any further, I want to remind people what's happening here. It's Ragtime and Randall. It's held up at the Elam Lutheran Church in Randall, Iowa, and we do it there because of the great acoustics of that church. And the events are Saturday, October 13th. It'll be 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. There's a program. Then lunch from 4 to 5:30, and that is created by the wonderful church ladies at the church, and there's always great desserts there. Then at 5:30 to 7:30, the evening program, that's Saturday, October 13th, coming up a week from this weekend up in Randall, Iowa, Ragtime and Randall, the annual event. And Rod, you're going to play, and also we have Brian Keenan. You might talk a little bit about Brian.
Yeah, Brian's been in the Ragtime circuit for quite a long time, very talented. He has a lot of great compositions that he has put together himself, and he is a treat to hear.
Oh, yeah, we've had, just talking from a standpoint of my history with Ragtime, we've had a lot of great artists up there and very skilled musicians. And we always covet as many folks who can come as possible because it's really a treat. And either of you might explain a little bit about what Ragtime is, its history and what kind of music it is to the person who is curious, Ragtime.
Well, I might give the first opinion. I like to get right to the bottom line as much as I can. From the piano player's perspective, the left hand is on the beat, the right hand is off the beat, and that's Ragtime.
It sounds very difficult to do. In fact, I've always marveled at the people who play piano and do Ragtime. First of all, I'm not a piano player. My brother was a gifted pianist. We could play by ear from the age of three, and the piano has always mystified me. But Ragtime, it seems like there are so many notes in such a short time that it's amazing to the layperson, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that, Rod, so rapidly?
Lots of practice. No way around it. And then I should comment, too, my wonderful, beautiful wife, Tricia, is going to be joining me on flute during these performances, too.
So, yeah, together you have a great performance, piano and flute.
Mm-hmm.
And Dalton, where are you from originally?
So I'm originally from South Central Missouri, the Ozarks.
And this is we think of the big festival in Missouri, the Ragtime Festival.
Yeah, that's in Sedalia every year, which is up towards Kansas City. I'm from about 90 miles south of Columbia, Missouri, is where I grew up, in a little town called St. James.
And here you are in New York City. Now, you tour extensively during the year, don't you?
I tour on and off. Usually I go out about two or three weeks at a time. And it's not just with this group. I play with many other different groups. I play in a swing dance band that's been happening for a number of years now. And we actually tour internationally with that band. So we'll go to Europe for a few weeks, or we'll go to Asia. Yeah, sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it's with regular bands, sometimes it's somebody calling me to fill in or just to play a one-off gig somewhere. And then the other times, you know, when I'm not on the road, I play gigs here in New York City.
So you're earning your living as a musician, is that right?
Actually, I kind of split my time between music and programming. I'm actually a computer programmer. So I'm a full-time freelancer in music and programming.
That is what a combination. Although, you know, there's always been a relationship between music and math. You know, people who are gifted in music understand math very often. And I don't know, is that a high-tech, low-tech lifestyle for you or what? Because
you know, that's actually interesting that you bring that up because when it comes to the piano, you know, there are lots of there's lots of technology in music, all these keyboards and synthesizers and computer music, and I've actually never gotten into any of that very much. I primarily stick with playing the acoustic piano. One, because I feel like that's all I have time for. It's kind of a, you know, it's its own beast that really needs your full attention.
And
I have never been able, I have yet to reach the point where I feel like I'm making music with electronic instruments. And maybe I'll get there at some point, but it's interesting you bring that up because as a programmer, you'd think that I would also be into electronic music, but I'm not. Really.
Well, wasn't there that famous moment when Bob Dylan first went electronic? He had always played acoustic guitar, and he all of a sudden started using electronic. And that was considered, what a night. He switched, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a big moment.
I have a question about this year's Ragtime and Randall. Rod mentioned that he and Tricia were going to be a piano and flute. And, of course, Love Struck Balladeers play all these instruments. I thought Ragtime was just a piano instrument.
Yeah, so that's a common misconception. But actually, if you go back through the history, you'll hear Ragtime in many different orientations of group orientations. There's a heavy lineage of Ragtime banjo music. There's Ragtime string bands. So you can go back and find a wide variety of different groupings. And if you think about it, when you play Ragtime piano, you're essentially playing all the parts of a band. Your left hand might be playing it, you know, the string bass, and the upbeat is like the mandolin or the banjo, and then your right hand could be playing a clarinet line or a cornet line. So you could think of all the parts that you play on the piano as just, you know, each being its own instrument as part of a greater collective. So the real key to having a band that plays a style like Ragtime is to, you know, I mean, I would say the piano lineage is probably the largest lineage. I mean, there's at least as far as the repertoire that we know of that's available to us, right? So I think, you know, the to have a successful sounding Ragtime band, you do want to start with the piano and try to, you know, pull out the feel of the way the piano music sounds, and, you know, and inject that into the band situation. And really, if you're thinking of the piano as an orchestra anyway, it's really pretty easy to do. I think you kind of know what instruments are supposed to play what. That's what we do. And the interesting thing about this group is that the instrumentation was not actually a big part of what we were thinking about when we got it together. It was more about the musicians themselves. And in fact, the impetus of this group was through the guitar player, Jake Sanders. He actually has produced an album of his own that has all of the members of this group on the album in different orientations or another. And I've been on the road with Jake a bunch myself with different various ensembles, so we're good friends. But ultimately, you know, Jake is like, oh, here are four other musicians I really love to play with. They're all really amazing. You know, I like them as people, and I also love them as musicians. And it just so happens that if we did all get together, we'd have a great sounding band. You know, you kind of need a bass player and you need a rhythm player. So you know, it wasn't simply, oh, let's get a band together with this instrumentation. It was more like, I like these people. They're amazing musicians. So, you know, as long as we can fill out the sound, their music's going to be take care of itself.
You know, that's wonderful because look at the camaraderie you have on tour. And when you get up on stage, you know what to expect of each other. But I'm very curious about how you came up with your name, Love Struck Balladeers. How did that happen?
Honestly, that's a good question. I don't know. I didn't come up with it.
And then I had the gall to call you the Lovesick Balladeers. That's a balladeer who's running a temperature. Okay.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because our bass player has a band called, I think it's just called Love Sick, and they play country music, which that's actually another genre we'll likely, you know, end up doing with this band. Not at Ragtime and Randall, but, you know, on a larger scope.
So a lovesick band, country, would be when your pickup truck and your dog are missing and your wife ran away.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is great, but people need to know the background. When we use the term ragtime, Rod, tell us a little bit about how ragtime, it's an early 20th century idea, right?
Yeah, it started in the late 1800s. Probably the one that that got everything going was in 1899, the publication of the Maple Leaf Rag. And that became very popular, and then there was a lot of other composers that were also wanting to publish ragtime, and it really proliferated mostly from about 1900 to 1920, mostly.
Tell us about, is it Scott Joplin?
Scott Joplin, yeah,
he
was a
big
king.
Name as a composer and performer.
He's what I call the Mozart of the ragtime world, where you have those melodies that long after the music has quit, it's still going in your head because it's so good.
Oh, yeah, there's a festival down in Missouri every year that...
Yes, it's generally the first weekend in June at Sedalia, Missouri, the Scott Joplin Ragtime Festival.
Right.
Yes.
Aptly named, because there are just a lot of rags named after or composed by, it's Rod. It's Rod Bianson. Yeah. And Rod, that's a good background, because basically you're talking about where this music came from and what its origin was. And I believe that it's interesting that I remember in the 50s when Elvis came out, the parents were all shook up because rock was such a suggestive music. Wasn't that true of ragtime?
Yes. There was even articles in major publications like the New York Times I don't know if they called it the New York Times back then, that was critical of this horrible, devilish type of music, and nothing has changed.
Yeah, ragtime was the music of youth and their protest against all the norms. Nothing ever changes.
Excuse me, my understanding was that it was the music that was played in brothels. And in fact, early on, you're talking about the history of Ragtime and Randall. The reason that Ragtime and Randall started was because of a musician, actually a piano tuner, who was on his way down to Ames to tune pianos, and was commuting from a farther distance north. I don't know exactly where. And he pulled off the highway at Randall, and there was a wonderful house for sale. And he and his partner and his teenage son, thought this is a good wholesome town for a teenager, moved in and started his partner was a piano technician. So together, they restore pianos and play them for the citizens of Randall, and it grew.
Yeah, it just started out as sort of a little private entertainment party situation, and grew into something that's occurred every year for over 25 years. And Ragtime and Randall, that has a nice alliteration, you know, Ragtime and Randall. And basically, it's a question of this little small town, and the population is, I don't know, 100, 200 maybe.
150 and growing is what the sign used to say.
Okay, well, so you've got it. This is actually right off Interstate 35, though. It's, exit 128 off I-35. So if you're coming north from Ames and Des Moines, then you take that exit, Randall, and you go off into the little town, and there's a great big elevator and, sort of a small business district. And the church is very close to the road that comes off the interstate, very easy to find. But I think the main thing is that you're treated to a very unique kind of music by people who are very competent and very entertaining. And so it's really going to be a treat.
There's something else that I'd like to say very delicately, because of our FCC limitations. When these guys were first in Randall, the local people were so welcoming. They brought them hot dishes. They just were, you know, they'd sit out in the yard in the summertime just to hear them play. And then, you know, they said, well, can you, you know, let's get the old school building and move a piano in and play. So they said when Ragtime and Randall was established, they didn't want anybody to have to pay. And so you don't hear where you can buy tickets. Mm-hmm. You just come.
It's just a happening. They preserved that sort of status. And Dalton, I don't know how to explain this. You'll have to see it when you get here, you know. Sounds kind of fascinating, doesn't it?
Sounds fascinating.
Is it still? Yes. It's in the Elam Lutheran Church now.
Yeah, it's in the church there, and you'll like the acoustics there. That really does well, doesn't it?
You bet.
Yeah, and I think the main thing is that, well, it's just a unique thing. And when you and your band members will look back on this, you'll say, where did we go and why did we go? And we love Randall, Iowa.
Yes. Yeah, it's definitely most of our other dates on this tour are because we're actually on a Midwest tour. So Randall's one of our stops. And most of the dates are, cities that people they recognize.
Yeah, and you're going to be playing some dates.
Where's Randall?
Yeah, right. Well, you'll talk about this for a long time because it might be one of your smallest gigs, but one of your most famous and remain memorable ones because of the uniqueness of this festival, its history, as Susan pointed out. And then, Rod, how many years have you been involved with Ragtime now in Randall?
About 20-some years, somewhere in there. I'm not sure I remember the first year.
Well, we're all looking forward to it. It's going to be Saturday, a week from this Saturday, October 13th, 2 to 4 p.m. program. This is at the Elam Lutheran Church in Randall, Iowa. Lunch by the church ladies at 4 o'clock. Then 5:30 to 7:30, the evening program. So a lot of Ragtime. You're going to see the Lovestruck Balladeers, Brian Keenan, and our guest today, Rod Byenson, performing at Ragtime and Randall. So it's going to be a real happening.
And my wife, Tricia, too.
Her flute.
Yeah.
Don't tell her I forgot. Well, we're going to end this segment going into an actual recording of the Harlem Strut, it's called. That's the name of the number. And performed by, of course, the Love Strut Balladeers.
You just heard the ragtime classic Harlem Strut by James P. Johnson, as played by the Love Struck Balladeers, one of the groups that it will be playing at Ragtime in Randall on October 13th. In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host Paul Wearson. Turning from music to the business that affects most of us in Central Iowa, farming. Pat Schlarbaum has come in to talk with Ron Tigner from the Iowa Farmers Union, giving us an update on how the new tariffs and other government policies are affecting Iowa farmers. Here's Pat.
We're going to have a discussion about where we're at with modern agriculture, where we're current programs, the situation for each commodity, including soybeans, corn, eggs, dairy. The role of the Farm Bill needs to be brought up, our trade policies that might need help, and things that we can do to protect in the short run and in the long run. So, Ron, welcome to Local Talk.
Why, thank
and,
you.
And tell us about, or what is the Iowa Farmers Union?
Well, the Iowa Farmers Union is a chapter of the National Farmers Union. We were founded in 1915 here in Iowa. The National Farmers Union, however, was founded in 1902 in Texas by a group of local farmers to form their own grain marketing cooperative. They wanted to work together so they could increase their potential income from marketing of grain.
So you've been in existence a number of years, and there are issues on the horizon. I understand from the news yesterday that let's just delve right into the NAFTA agreement, the North American Free Trade, that was signed in, as I recall, 1994. Now we've got a new set of trade arrangements. Can you bring us up to date on the United States, Mexico, Canada agreement?
Well, this new agreement is part of the overall outlook to try to redefine what goes on in trade for the United States is agricultural products. And so the first step in that was this agreement between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. And what it's going to do is going to reduce tariffs down to basically zero for everything that had not previously been at zero. So that would enable producers in the United States to have a greater equal balance in pricing between the countries, each country, and then also to enable more trade to take place between both the United States and Canada.
So zero tariffs, apparently, is that going to target the dairy industry? Was that one of the shortcomings of NAFTA?
Well, dairy is included very heavily in that. I have some information about here. Currently, the U.S. dairy products exports to Canada was $619 million in 2017. And now Canada will provide exclusively to the U.S. new tariff rate quotas on things like fluid milk and cheese and butter and cream powder, ice cream, whey, and all those different kinds of dairy products. And then after 6 months, Canada is going to eliminate two different classes of milk pricing that they've had that is different than the U.S. So those certain classes of pricing Canada has, well, they'll have to ensure that the price set is no lower than a level based on U.S. price for non-fat dry milk. So that levels the prices out more easily and allows for more transportation of products between the two countries.
And I hear the term in these trade agreements of certainty. Let's talk about why that term has grown in prioritization. It seems to be pretty important.
Well, farmers need certainty so they can decide what they're going to be doing in the spring for that cropping season, for raising of livestock, things like that. However, it doesn't appear like these agreements are going to be strong enough to help provide that kind of certainty because there's still a lot of price uncertainty going on.
Well, we're definitely in that arena of how to maintain a agricultural economy here in the state. And one thing I'd like to kind of lead into things that the Iowa Farmers Union would like to see grow over time. For instance, I hear a lot of discussion about cover crops and or even just the farmers markets that have seemed to be growing in prominence. How do the farmers markets meet the mission of the Iowa Farmers Union?
One of our key initiatives is to promote local food production. If you look at what we have for food here in the state of Iowa, if every truck that brings some kind of food product into the state were to stop coming into the state all at the same time, we'd only have about 3 days' worth of actual food supply for all of our citizens. So we need local food production. We need to be able to feed our people here in the state of Iowa, to do it well, to provide for a good income from the farmers and for rural communities in Iowa, and at the same time then what we have for excess produce of any type that we could also market it somewhere else in the United States or around the world.
Well, and you're touching on what I consider a pretty shortcoming of the NAFTA agreement, which is North American Free Trade Agreement of 1994, that seems to be kind of in transition and being replaced. Are the marketers or the middleman, if you will, the ADMs of the agricultural industry, I guess with farmers markets, that middleman, his role is not necessarily as essential. So is there – what's been driving our modern agricultural production here in Iowa? Is how much does ADM or Archer Daniels Midlands marketing affect what happens in the pocketbook of our current Iowa farmer?
As an overall outlook, farming has been dictated to a large degree by farm policy. What we've seen in the past were commodity supports for corn, soybeans, cotton, rice, and wheat received the major crop subsidy payments, and that does help farmers out to a degree. But at the same time, it provides for increased production in those various crops so that the grain marketers, the people buying grain to feed to their livestock and vertically integrated facilities have cheap corn. And then they can mark up the cost of the product in selling it as a meat product or an added processed product. And then they make the larger markup in that process rather than the farmers receiving the share that they should receive.
Well, there's also this overarching farm bill that is reinstituted every 5 years. Where are we at with the farm bill, and how would that affect these markets that seem to dictate the bottom line for the economic stability of our Iowa farm economy?
Well, currently the farm bill is expired. So we have a number of provisions that also have expired with that. And we, as a farmers union, we support stronger enforcement of antitrust legislation within the farm bill, as being included in the farm bill, increasing those kinds of activities so that family farmers can have more say in what happens in the marketplace. And we also want to reinstitute things like the Conservation Reserve Program and increase that, actually. And that particular part of the farm bill has expired. So there's a hold on placing new contracts for Conservation Reserve Program. And then also the Conservation Stewardship Program, that has also expired. So the USDA has placed a hold on adding new contracts this time. And they want to try to enroll some of those programs in the EQIP program, which is funded through 2019, but that could end, too, in the very near future, depending on what happens in the future, what happens to that program. So we want to keep those all three separate and at the same time put strong safety farm safety net programs into the farm bill so we can increase profitability for family farmers.
Well, so you mentioned the CRP. That's pretty near and dear to my heart because it is one of the provisions of the farm bill called Conservation Reserve Program, where highly erodible acres are removed from production and seeded down. We worked diligently for a number of decades on trying to get a good seed bank of native prairie grasses that would have a good effect on wildlife. So the CRP would seem to be something that would assist the local farming community in not only taking or kind of limiting production when we're providing cost support and subsidy for the corn and beans, and rather than providing subsidies, we're kind of limiting production. But in the process, we're creating wildlife habitat, and the CRP has been shown to improve water quality. I mean, these are programs that they seem to go hand in hand with sustainability, and yet here we are with a farm bill that has expired. And well, and it's good to hear that the CRP is one of the important tenets, if you will, of the Iowa Farmers Union. Are there other programs that are essentially in that category of these make a lot of sense? Why is it that a farm bill can get through the House of Representatives, can get through the Senate, and apparently now is in conference committee? What are the sticking points of a farm bill to have it in this state of flux or languishing, as it seems to be?
A lot of it has to do with whether or not to separate the Supplemental Nutrition Program away from the Farm Bill.
Oh, that acronym is SNAP.
SNAP.
Yeah.
Putting that separate, and then also requiring certain work requirements as a part of that to receive the SNAP. And so there's those who want to separate it away and those who want to keep it together. And the main point about including SNAP, and an important point, is that when you do include it in the farm bill, then both urban and rural legislators at the national level will come together and come to an agreement to pass the farm bill. And if you separate them away, then I think you'll have a hard time getting that passed.
Oh, you erode the support from the urban areas that the farming community requires some assistance. There needs to be provisions that bring people together as opposed to splitting them apart.
True. And then all those other benefits like CRP and the other conservation programs, they may not ever get passed. Mm-hmm. So that's a winning thing for both farmers and rural communities, the environment, and also urban people if we support the farm bill and keeping it together.
Are you actively encouraging our listener to contact their legislator? Or what would be the message? Are you supporting the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement? And
we as a union, the Farmers Union, support the president for taking on this challenge of improving trade agreements at the same time, and then also providing security for our own sovereignty as a country, and being involved in international trade and reducing our trade deficit. But at the same time, we feel that the agreement does not go far enough, and it does not provide enough coverage. The $12 billion package is not nearly enough. It's estimated that in 1 month of June that there was $13 billion that farmers lost in income.
So in 1 month.
Yeah. $12 billion would only basically cover 1 month's
loss. And the $12 billion you're referring to was when the trade agreements were essentially discontinued, trashed, or we're going to hit the reset button. And the posture then was, well, but we've got $12 billion to support, try to keep the soybean farmers and the wheat farmers and the corn producers. So the $12 billion is that considered wholly inadequate? Or?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's not nearly enough. For example, here, the payment rate for corn to help with the trade disparity will only be a 1 cent per bushel that they can possibly receive. And then for soybeans, it will be more because there's more trade inequities related to the soybeans trade. So that'll be a higher amount. That'll be $1.65 a bushel. But that doesn't really cover the cost of what they are losing.
Are those payments being are they writing the checks currently, or what is the where are we at?
You can apply for those currently through the FSA or either online locally. Go to your local FSA office or submit them electronically. On or about December 3rd. They will announce a second payment rate.
Okay.
So there's something new coming out later.
Coming December 3rd. We've got until then to contact our legislators. Is there anything else that is the message of the
I'll say here, the sign-up period is September 24th to January 15th.
Well, sir, is there anything else? What did you like to leave our listener with this morning?
Just contact our U.S. legislators and tell them to support a strong farm bill and basically fix our trade problems.
Yeah, Ron Tigner with the Iowa Farmers Union. Check those folks out over in Nevada. They're an advocate and a strong voice for modern agriculture in Iowa as we know it. Thank you, Ron.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and you just heard Ron Tigner and Pat Schlarbaum talking about the effect of tariffs on the farm economy. That's pretty scary, but maybe not as scary as the play being performed by the Ankeny Community Theater, Frankenstein. We have Ollie Kerwin, the assistant director, on the phone to tell us about it.
Well, Paul here, and hello, Ollie.
Good morning. How are you?
You sound very perky. I wish I had that voice in the morning. I work hard to do it. I'm a night person. Hey, tell us about that show, Frankenstein, huh?
Wonderful. So, Ankeny Community Theater, we're going to be performing Frankenstein by Tim Kelly, but originally by Mary Shelley. And this production is significantly more faithful to the original book than, you know, Boris Karloff running around in green. So our monster, he speaks just like everybody else. And it's really awesome. The show starts to take place a little bit after the events of the book have begun. The creature's kind of already been created, and then we sort of see what kind of havoc that wreaks on Victor's life.
Wow. Now, is this a comedy or something that'll make children cower under their seats?
It is definitely not a comedy, but I would say it's a little more tense and eerie than it is necessarily frightening. We have it rated PG. So there's really no language or anything like that in the show.
Well, now tell me about the cast. How many folks are in the cast?
We have 8 actors in our cast, and half of them are new to Ankeny's stage.
Isn't that fun to have new people? It really is fun, isn't it?
Oh, Oh, it's wonderful. And, you know, some of them have acted before. One of them, she's been our stage manager before and kind of been behind the scenes. And we finally got her to audition, and she's been on stage, and she's been wonderful. And you never know until you try.
What about costuming? Frankenstein, it sounds complicated. Does he have bolts in his neck and all this stuff, or what?
No, no bolts. He does have some really awesome makeup on, but I will kind of leave that as a surprise. And then Cheryl Clark is our wonderful costumer, and she made all these dresses for the women that are, you know, Victorian inspired or from patterns from Victorian England, and the men are in really awesome suits and everything. I love it. It just, it adds so much to the script to be able to see it in these fabrics and patterns.
That's a lot of fun for the folks who costume and a real sight for the audience because these are very ornate costumes, and I suppose the men are in frock coats, right? I love frock coats.
I love a frock coat. We've got one. Victor is in a suit. We open up on his wedding. And then we've got an officer who's in a uniform, and then another gentleman, Victor's friend Henry, who is kind of looks a little professorial in his outfit as well.
Well, are there dialects here that are used, or are you using straight English?
It is just straight English, but the language is itself kind of elevated. The show is what we would consider a melodrama, so everything is kind of intensely felt, and all of the words are really strategically chosen. But you can still understand what they're saying. It's all in English, and it's all in our regular accents and everything.
I just thought maybe a lot of German accent would be the mad scientist, you know.
No, not this time.
Tell us about the plot. What's the plot outline for this thing?
So Victor returns to his chateau to escape the monster and tries to kind of shake free all of this horror. But then the creature shows back up and demands that Victor create for him a bride. And so Victor then has to grapple with the challenges of, will he do this a second time? How will he deal with his mother or his fiance and his responsibilities to them as well as to himself and possibly to science? And that's kind of where our story takes us.
Wow, sounds interesting. What do you think, Susan?
Well, I have a problem because I've never seen the original Frankenstein with Boris Karloff. And I suspect that by the time you saw it, it had been colorized because I'm pretty sure it was originally in black and white, just like Young Frankenstein, which is the only Frankenstein I've seen. When I think of Frankenstein, I think of the lines out of that. And I read a review that said that this was funny. You told me this is not funny the way you do it, right?
No, right. The script kind of lends itself to potentially have some comedic moments. But our director chose to not play them that way, to kind of keep up the sort of tense moments or the discomfort that the audience might be feeling as all of these really stressful things keep happening. And some of it is funny. There's no way around it. We have lovely actors and the script lends itself, but they're more tension breaks than they are amusing.
Well, it sounds intriguing. Now, to expand a little more, tell us a little more about the Ankeny Community Theater. First of all, give us the dates of production for this show.
Yes, so we perform October 5th through the 14th. We have Friday through Sunday this upcoming weekend, and then Thursday through Sunday the following weekend. And we are located on Southwest 3rd Street in Ankeny, Iowa. We are a black box theater. We seat about 90 for each show at our maximum, so it's a very nice, intimate kind of theater experience, as well as our volunteers are all everything is volunteer run at Ankeny Community Theater. All of our actors are volunteers, our production team is volunteers, the people at the box office, the people helping with ushering and everything, and everyone's so nice and welcoming. If you all haven't been up there, I welcome you to come see our show and hang out with us for a bit.
And how many shows a year are produced by Ankeny Community Theater?
We do 6 main stage shows, and this season we have 3 studio shows. The studio shows run for 1 weekend, and our main stage shows run for 2 weekends.
So basically you're talking about quite a volunteer effort, because each of those productions, and people don't realize the number of people that are involved in a production beyond just the folks who appear on stage. Like when you add up everybody on this production, how many bodies do you think you have there, Allie?
Oh, tons. so we have the 8 people on stage. We've got about 6 or probably 8 or 9 who have been doing stuff backstage, as well as with directing, assistant directing, stage production, etc. And then all of the people who are going to be volunteering at the evenings, that's another 4 per night, and we have 7 shows. So we are a small army of volunteers.
That's what I love about community theater. You need volunteers, everyone from the leads to the ushers, you know. And so community theater, wherever it's done, is really quite an undertaking. And you have to have community support. How long has Ankeny Community Theater been going on there? Do you know, Allie?
We are, I want to say, in our 37th season. We were founded in 1981.
And constantly, for that time, there have been productions being made by the Ankeny Community Theater. And look at all the folks who, over that time, have been involved both on the boards, as we say, and behind the scenes and ushering and all those things. And I'm sure that you always entertain more volunteers, right, Allie?
Absolutely. And everybody, if people want to get involved, they can obviously come by the theater, the shows, but we have our website, which is Ankeny Community Theater, theater spelled with an R-E, and there they can find volunteer forms or volunteer and audition information, sign up for our emailing list, and, you know, start getting some information about us.
That's great about today. Everyone has a website. It really facilitates people getting in touch and people coming forward and people getting involved. And before we let you go, say again the performance dates so we know what's going on.
We will be performing October 5th through the 14th, Friday through Sunday this weekend, and Thursday through Sunday next weekend on Southwest 3rd Street in Ankeny, Iowa.
It's going to be fun. Frankenstein, very seasonal presentation by the Ankeny Community Theater. And our guest today talking about that wonderful production is Allie Kerwin. Thanks, you, Allie.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And break a leg, okay? Break a leg.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wearson and I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Rod Byenson, Dalton Ridenour, Ron Tigner, Patch Larbaum, and Allie Kerwin.
Now, you can listen to today's local talk show and any of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org. There are also rebroadcasts of this morning's show at noon and 5 p.m.
Local Talk was engineered by Aladdin. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Harlem Strut by James P. Johnson, as played by the Lovestruck Balladeers.
Yeah. Well, Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, just contact us at 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Now, that's also where you need to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership. Do it today. Just look for the yellow donate button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Stevens Auditorium, presenting Celtic Thunder X, an Irish male vocal group that will feature new songs and traditional Irish musical instruments, on Wednesday, October 17th at 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at center.iastate.edu.